Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 28th of February. And before we begin talking about Milwaukee School Voucher Program, I do want to thank the many of you who have sent me these beautiful cards and emails. They've just been they've been wonderful, and I really believe they help mend a person's heart. So thank you very much. An examination of Milwaukee's school choice voucher program this hour of the program. It is the first large examination of the program since 1995. They examined standardized test results for voucher students with those from a match set of MPS students. And I guess to me, one of the more alarming pieces of the whole study was that the test scores for both sets of students were below the 50th percentile nationally. They were about 33%. And so the question as we examine the voucher program is, how do we best educate our low-income students? Is the voucher program the answer? Is something else the answer? We have a lot to discuss the first hour, and we'll have two guests with us. This study was released on Monday, and it was conducted by the School Choice Demonstration Project at the University of Arkansas. The two main researchers are known for support of and opposition to school choice. And so I think you get a fairly balanced look at this whole program. We'll have two guests with us this first hour. We'll start with Mike Ford, Research Associate for School Choice Wisconsin. And we'll tell you our later guest as soon as we know who that person will be. And we'll welcome your phone calls. You are an audience highly interested in education and in this program as well. So join us with your calls at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Should you be joining us in Milwaukee today, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Mike Ford, Research Associate for School Choice Wisconsin, our first guest. Hello, Mike. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome, Kathleen. Good to have you back on the air.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Good.
One of the things that did alarm me, and it must you as well, that when we look at the test scores for both sets of students, below the 50th percentile nationally, it's about 33%. Does that mean both voucher and public schools are failing our low-income students?
Well, no. I think you need to remember that this is a baseline study. The year one of the apples-to-apples data, which you're describing, showed MPS students outperforming choice in grade 4 and choice students outperforming MPS in grade 8. None of this is very surprising. Both these groups have similar background characteristics, and that is why the study team is very clear that this is only a snapshot. It tells us nothing about what has caused these performance levels. Tracking the students over the next 4 years will isolate exactly what effect the choice program is having on academic achievement.
Yeah. It would be good to know what caused the performance levels, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, and that's what we're going to learn. That's the whole point of the longitudinal study.
Why is it that this program has not been very carefully studied? I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first large examination of the program since 95.
Somewhat correct. In 2000, the Legislative Audit Bureau did an audit of the program, which told us a lot of descriptive information. But the reason it's taken so long for a serious academic evaluation is because several previous attempts to mandate a study have stalled, most recently in 2004. They have been vetoed or just stalled in the legislature.
But now things have changed here, and so we'll see more examination?
Well, correct. In 2005, Act 125 mandated this study through 2011.
Mm-hmm. Tell me why you are, and I don't know how long-term a fan and how old you are, Mike, but how long-term a fan you are of the voucher program.
Well, I've been in Milwaukee for about 6 years now, and I have been a fan of it since then. It's frustrating nationwide to see so many reforms that don't move the needle. We have had a steady achievement gap between minority and white students across this country, but in Milwaukee, we're farther along than anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the successes of the program, you point to what?
Well, first off, in 2003, the Brookings Institution did a report. This was by Paul Hill at the University of Washington. He examined all the random assignment data out there on choice programs, and he concluded that school choice has a positive impact on academic achievement. Now, closer to home, just last month, we had a sociologist by the name of John Robert Warren at the University of Minnesota, and he studied graduation rates in choice and MPS over the last 4 years and concluded that choice was about 14% higher. So we know that educational outcomes are positively affected.
Was that the study that said, Mike, that parents are happier with choice?
That was the longitudinal study, the one just released this week. And that's significant on two levels. First, obviously, it's excellent that choice parents are happier than MPS parents, but more positively, both MPS and choice parents are happier than the national average.
I noticed that. I thought that was good news to have people happy with education.
Absolutely, and that alone is very significant and not typical of an urban place.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that struck me, because our kids have been in MPS schools for years and years, the student-teacher ratio seems to be lower in voucher schools, but it also pointed to it being fairly low in MPS schools, which I thought, is this right? 16 to 1? I thought, our kids have been in classrooms where there can be as many as 40 to 1.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's all over the map. I think you can attribute some of that to the SAGE program, which is grades K through 3, which mandates a 15 to 1 student-teacher ratio. And it also can be attributed to, over the last 17 years, we've had per-pupil funding in MPS go way up.
The study also looked at the variation among voucher schools. Would you say that some of these schools are really terrific and some of these schools are really bad?
Well, like anywhere else, like in MPS, there's going to be good schools, there's going to be bad schools. We have had tremendous success in the past 5 years or so in getting the worst schools out, and that's through accreditation and through a set of fiscal accountability requirements called Act 155, and we're really getting to the point where we're eliminating that bottom tier of schools. That's good for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And what about students with special needs? The voucher program has been criticized, saying that they don't have to take as many special education students, and they're not taking as many.
Yeah, well, one of the popular myths out there is that the choice program can pick and choose students and doesn't have to take special needs students. That is not true. They cannot screen for special needs. A longitudinal study found that about two-thirds of the schools do provide special services for special needs students and that about 9% or so of the students are special needs.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand this is going to change. I wonder when this may be the case, but it seems to me as though it may point to a better quality of teaching in MPS schools than in voucher schools. I guess I didn't know this, that voucher schools, the only requirement for teaching is that you have a high school diploma. You don't need to have a college degree.
Well, that's not exactly true. The accreditation requirement passed in 2005 requires that all schools become accredited within 3 years, and all of the approved agencies do mandate bachelor degrees for their teachers. And the longitudinal study found that about 30% of school choice teachers have their master's degree. That's lower than MPS, but on a whole, they also found that choice teachers have more experience.
More experience. They stay longer.
Correct.
Why?
I'm imagining that they're enjoying their experience there, but I would have to wait for the longitudinal study to clear that up.
Mm-hmm. And when are we getting that longitudinal study again?
Well, this was year one. There's going to be about 35 reports issued over the next 4 years.
35 reports?
Correct. They're examining everything from test scores to public school improvement to fiscal impact to all across the gamut.
Mm-hmm. And who's doing all those reports? The same people who did this one?
Yes, the School Choice Demonstration Project. The chief investigators are Pat Wolf and John Woody.
And what about this certainly was touted as one of the benefits of voucher, is that it would be more competitive and it would make public schools better. Has anybody looked at that? Has it?
We have seen evidence of that. Most recently, Raji Chakrabarty, she's an economist at the New York Fed. She has a paper in the Journal of Public Economics that finds that the MPS schools most exposed to competition from choice and charter have test score gains in math and reading. And this confirms an earlier study by Carolyn Hoxby, who was a Harvard economist at the time, finding the same thing. Mm-hmm. So we do see evidence of that. And more anecdotally, just over the past 10 years or so, we have seen modest gains in MPS graduation rates and test scores.
According to the article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel earlier this week about the study, it said that some 80% of voucher students are in religious schools. Is that true, and is that one of the reasons that parents choose voucher schools, and why would they choose a school with a religious philosophy?
Correct. That is true. It's important to remember that even at a religious school, the students are not required to participate in religious instruction. But more importantly, the longitudinal studies found that for both MPS and choice, the overwhelming majority of parents chose on educational quality.
How many students are in voucher schools now in Milwaukee?
18,550.
Uh-huh. And what about nationally? Is it a program that's really, I know it started here, has it gone throughout the country now?
Well, there are programs in D.C., in Cleveland, and Florida, but really Milwaukee remains the biggest.
And when you read the report earlier this week, Mike, did you initially say this is good news for voucher schools, this is mixed news, this is not the news that we hoped it would be? What did you think?
Well, absolutely good news. I was I was very excited to see all the good things going on in the choice schools. We saw that 80% of the schools have music programs, 80% have art, 70% offer tutoring, have after-school programs. So I was ecstatic about that. And I was also pleased to see them establish the baseline. Again, I can't stress enough that in year one, you cannot tell why these students are achieving at the levels they are. We will really learn what effect the choice program is having on academic achievement as we track these students over the next 4 years.
Mm-hmm. It does seem amazing, though, to have this program around for so many years, and we don't know the answer to that.
It is unfortunate that all those all the previous attempts to start a study have stalled. But, like I said, we do know graduation rates, we do know educational outcomes, and we do know things about public school improvement. So I think there is a substantial body of research out there showing that this works.
Did this report look at another thing that was criticized about the choice program, and that's that the voucher schools would get cream-of-the-crop students, parents who were highly involved in their students' education, and thus would take the best students from MPS?
Yeah, well, John Witte, who did the original choice studies, concluded back in 95 that that wasn't the case, and every major study since then in any voucher program has proven that not to be the case, and this, again, affirmed that.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls. We're looking at the study done on choice, the first large examination of the program since 1995. It was released on Monday of this week. It was conducted by the School Choice Demonstration Project, part of the Department of Education Reform at the University of Arkansas. And our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. It's been around for a number of years in Milwaukee. What do you think of the findings of this report? What do you generally think about the voucher program? We certainly welcome your call. Oh, there go the phones. I knew they would. I knew you have interest in this topic. And Mike will be with us the first half hour of the program. The second half hour, we'll be speaking with Tom Morgan. He is the executive director of the Milwaukee Teacher Education Association. They have concerns about the choice program. And we start our calls with Representative Fred Kessler, I believe it is. Hi.
Hi, good morning, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Okay.
Good.
Kathleen, you know that I have been involved in some controversy regarding school choice in the last several weeks.
Yes.
And I guess there are several things that concern me about the school choice program. Among them, of course, is the funding mechanism of school choice, where it's having really a terribly adverse impact because the state is not picking up the same proportion of the cost of school choice. Instead, it's being shifted to Milwaukee taxpayers. And probably the average $100,000 assessed value house, school choice costs an additional approximately $150. And that's a terrible burden on our taxpayers. And, of course, we want to see if we can get that fixed. And we were unsuccessful in doing this earlier this session. And, of course, it looks like the session is ending in the next several days. As I told your telephone person, I'm on my way right now to Madison, so I'm on my cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
There are other things, though, that concern me about school choice. And one of the greatest is when I chose the school to send my children to, we had comparative mathematics and English language test scores on every public school. So
right.
We could make a choice on where do we want to send our child based on quality. School choice programs have resisted individual testing of comparable tests to what are administered to Milwaukee schools. And therefore, I think it denies the parent the right to make a honest evaluation of the school choice. And that's a real major concern that I have.
So you were concerned that the kind of testing that this study did was not the testing that you want?
Right. It's not the testing I want because it doesn't test individual schools and publicize it, and it doesn't use the same apples and apples
right.
that Milwaukee school system uses. So it leaves parents blind, totally blind. You don't know if you were going to the best school choice program
mm-hmm.
or the worst school choice
mm-hmm.
program.
All right. Which one do you want to start with, the funding or the testing, Mike?
Well, I'll go with testing
okay.
real quick. I mean, first off, I think Representative Kessler's sake, we need to ask the parents. The longitudinal study did that. 1% of people who didn't choose a choice school attributed it to not having enough information about their individual school. So So I don't see that problem that you're describing with the parents as described by the longitudinal study. Secondly, the longitudinal study is tracking apples to apples, a sample of students in choice, a sample of comparable students in MPS, taking the exact same WKCE, and that's how they're tracking progress. So there is substantial testing going on in choice schools, and parents are satisfied with it.
But it would be nice to know, I mean, Fred has a point here, to know how students in a specific school are doing, for voucher schools, I would imagine, as well, to see how your students are, how the students in the school are performing.
Well, yes, and that's exactly what the study accomplishes.
From individual schools? Not from individual schools.
Well, no, this is looking at the entire program.
Right.
But I stress again that parents are not dissatisfied with the information they're getting from the schools, and one of the beauties of school choice is that you can go directly to the school and decide on your own.
Uh-huh. And what about the funding? People who are supporters and detractors of the program do think that it's adversely affecting Milwaukee taxpayers.
Well, it does. It continues to be a problem. Currently, Milwaukee taxpayers pay more for a choice student than an MPS student. The flaw exists because even though overall per pupil cost is higher in MPS, Milwaukee taxpayers pay 45% of the cost of choice as compared to about 75% of MPS, or reverse that, the state does. But we need to remember on this is last spring, Mayor Barrett and Representative Jason Fields, they had a plan to fix the funding flaw once and for all during the budget process. The Shepherd Express reported on it. Attempts by the mayor to convince the Milwaukee members of the Budget Committee, Senator Taylor and Representative Cologne, they went nowhere. We had a fix, and it was shot down by Milwaukee's delegation. It's incredibly frustrating.
Thanks very much, Representative Kessler, for your call. Let's pause for a moment and return. Mike Ford is with us. This first half hour, Research Associate for School Choice Wisconsin. We are looking at the examination of Milwaukee's School Voucher Program major study just released on Monday of this week. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned for Larry Mueller later today. After 11, he talks with an Idaho reporter about forest fire management. And after 11:45, Larry and his guests talk about the delicate balance of government in times of public chaos. Back to phone calls for Mike, and we go to Hank from La Crosse next. Hello, Hank.
Thank you. A couple of years ago, I took the time to actually call a couple of the schools that were in the voucher program in Milwaukee, and I was very disturbed by what I found as to what some of the subject matter that was being taught. I'll just cite three things. At the different schools, it was being taught that the Pope is the Antichrist. It was being taught that women could never have authority over a man, that the role of woman is to be submissive to men. It is being taught that homosexuals should be killed.
Hank, who are you talking to? What schools are you talking about?
The fundamentalist schools.
And you called them and asked what the curricula was, or what?
Yes, I did. Now, it is there are Muslim schools there that are receiving money. It is a capital crime in a number of Muslim nations to be a homosexual.
We need to jump in here. Salaam School, which is a Muslim school here in Milwaukee. Salaam means peace in Arabic. What Hank is describing here is just simply not true.
Yeah, I would
spoke with the imam there.
Call
some of the Wells schools, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod schools. I believe there's about a dozen of them there. They teach that the Pope is the Antichrist. They teach that women should never have authority over men.
Well, let's broaden this a little bit. What about the religious education in these schools? And then let's talk also about, a lot of people believe that there shouldn't be taxpayer funding for religious schools, that it's not American. Mike?
Well, in 2002, Zelman, Supreme Court case, settled that question. It is legal for public funds to go to religious schools as long as it's going to the parents, which is how it works in the choice program. The check is cut to the parents.
Right. So you don't share his, and I don't know where he's getting his information.
I,
it seems way over the top here.
Personally,
but
I don't think Hank is being honest.
Thanks very much for the call. We go to Kathy from Milwaukee. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call, and
sure.
I'm glad you're feeling better and back to work. I was a teacher for MPS for 10 years, and I've interviewed students who left choice schools, and I have nothing against the program. I honestly don't. But there needs to be oversight for the individual schools. I mean, there's things going on where the students don't have books. I've had students who, on their transcript, it said that they had passed Algebra 2, and they don't even know how to do a simple integer problem. Their academic skills are extremely low. And when I ask them, you know, in a nice way, I'm just like, so how was your, what's up with your education, and what did you think of your last school? And they'll tell me things like, they didn't teach me anything there. And, I mean, they're not lying to me.
What kind of oversight is there, Mike?
Well these are anecdotes, and I appreciate them. We can talk about accountability. There's, mm-hmm. there's constructive accountability. What we have now, we have fiscal accountability, which is Act 155. It keeps schools that are not financially ready from opening. But we also have academic accountability, like accreditation. A school without books, a school that did not have a curriculum, would not be able to be accredited, would not be able to participate in this program. What we don't need is destructive accountability. Representative Kessler, who was on the phone earlier, was recently circulating a memo whose design purpose was to use accountability to cut choice enrollment by 40%. That doesn't make schools better. It hurts low-income parents and students. I think it's important that we keep striving to make our schools better, but there are regulations in place that accomplish that.
And who put those regulations in place, and are there visits to these schools to see? Because I know there have been a fair number that have closed in the last couple of years. Are there visits to the schools to see what's going on in the classroom? I'd like to know who's doing a thorough examination.
Yeah, that would be the burden on the accreditation agencies, which are there's four or five of them that are in the law. They're allowed to do that, but yeah, they do a site visit every few years or so just to ensure that they're meeting the requirements.
Every how off? 4 or 5 years?
The accreditation process generally takes about 3 years. It's designed to allow the schools to improve to meet that requirement.
And who are these agencies? Where are they from?
There's the Wisconsin Religious and Independent Schools Association. There's the Marquette University Institute for the Transformation of Learning, and there's a few others under the umbrella organization, which is the National Council for Private School Accreditation.
Thanks, Kathy, for your call. We go to Ironwood, Michigan next, and David. Hi, David.
Yeah, I want to make a point that a lot of private schools are just excellent, but there are a few, like the people called in, are just terrible. I know of a person who went to one of these so-called Bible schools, and when they went back to the public school, they had over a year to make up. To catch up to the students. Another point I want to make is public education. People say, well, I want to send their values onto their kids, that parents should have an ultimate. Is it right for someone who's in the KKK to send their kids to a KKK school to teach racism? Society has an obligation to pass on liberal American values to the kids. And then the kids could learn their values from their parents. And then when they get too old, they make a decision. Who's right?
Mike.
Well, the state of Wisconsin, for all private schools, not just choice schools, has a minimal set of private school requirements. A school teaching a KKK-based curriculum would not be allowed to open.
Mm-hmm. In the study, this goes back, I think I brought this up earlier, that the study did point to the fact that there is a greater variation among voucher schools than public schools in terms of quality of education. How can you bring that up?
Well, yeah, you know, the choice program, there's a more diverse set of schools because they're not bound by a single state curriculum. It's natural we're going to have a broader range of schools. And you also have to remember where these students are coming from. This study and studies before that find that students leave a system that is underperforming to go to a private school. You are going to see lower baseline test scores from those students. That is expected. The key is value-added gains. Deb Lindsay, who's the MPS researcher who does an excellent job, uses value-added gains. Her quote is that it levels the playing field between schools serving diverse populations of students, and it improves our understanding of achievement gains. And that's what matters. We want to know what impact the schools are having on students. We don't need to know where they came from. We don't need to know their background characteristics that are causing them to perform at low levels initially. We want to find out how choice schools are improving their performance.
Mm-hmm. Let's go one more call for you, and then we switch guests and have another perspective. Chuck from Wauwatosa, hi.
Hi. I'm calling to ask for a clarification on the teacher student ratio numbers that you and your guest cited a few minutes ago. You expressed surprise that it was so low for MPS, the teacher-student ratio. My question is this. I'm a retired MPS teacher also, 24 years in the system. And I believe, but correct me if I'm wrong, either you or your guest, that the teacher-student ratio is determined by simply taking the teaching staff in the building, in each building, and dividing that number, whatever it is, into the number of students in the building. Is that correct?
Mike, is that correct?
That would make sense to me. The longitudinal study looked at groups of comparable students.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that clarifies that. I thought that's how it was done. Now, the problem here, or the issue as I see it, is that it's a very misleading figure for each and every school, whether it's a choice school or an MPS school, because the largest single population, the fastest growing population in any school, MPS or choice school, or certainly, I'm not sure, I'm thinking of that for choice schools, but for MPS certainly is those students enrolled in special education or exceptional ed, whatever the current terminology is. And so that figure for each school includes the exceptional ed teachers. Now, those classes must be small, clearly. They're very small. I taught advanced placement U.S. history classes at Riverside University High School for 5 or 6 years, where I had 35 students in a class.
Right.
And they would have put more in there, and those were supposed to be smaller. But the teacher-student ratio for Riverside, I assume, if you look at it, would be pretty low. You
know? Right.
So could you respond to that either?
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. It seemed to me as though those figures were way off as well, just from having a lot of dealings with the system. Mike?
Yeah, well, of course there's going to be variations between classrooms. This is a global statistic.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call, Chuck. Mike, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, and I want to thank you. I want to end with just so many of these callers here seem to be stuck in this us-first-them mentality. We have to understand that supporting school choice, supporting MPS, supporting charter schools, this is not mutually exclusive. The goal here is to raise the level of academic achievement for students all across the board in Milwaukee.
Right. I think you're right. And that's one of the things that's disturbing about this study is that it's showing that these students in comparable low-income households are at 33 percentile nationally. And that's unacceptable, I think.
It is unacceptable, and it's unfortunately typical of large urban school districts. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're going to learn in the next 4 years exactly how school choice can raise that level of academic achievement.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mike, very much for the call. We go now to another guest with a different point of view on this topic. John Treader getting our next guest on the line, and we'll welcome more phone calls. We're looking at the voucher program this hour of our program, a major study of the program. There haven't been enough of these studies, but a major study has been released on Monday of this week. It was done by the School Choice Demonstration Project, part of the Department of Education Reform at the University of Arkansas. And joining us this next half hour is the Executive Director of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, Tom Morgan. Tom, before his current position, served as, in Illinois, UNISERV director and president of the Rockford Education Association. He taught science at the middle school level in the Rockford Public Schools and at Roosevelt Junior High School, also at Milwaukee Public Schools. He is joining us now with a different point of view, and we'll be welcoming more of your phone calls. A couple lines are open. They've been crowded. If you're trying to get through, you could do so at this very moment. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050 for you to join our conversation as we get your response to this study on vouchers. Do you think that program should be expanded? Do you think that we have figured out a good way to educate low-income students in this country, and particularly in this state, Milwaukee, of course, having the oldest and largest school choice program? Hello, Tom. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Yeah, good morning to you. Thanks. Thank you. So overall, the study showing, I think, that people in voucher schools and people in MPS schools, when you look at the same low-income population, that there is not a whole lot of difference in how they're performing.
Overall, I think that's correct. One, I know that the Milwaukee public school system is doing some research. One of the variables not addressed in here is Milwaukee does have now a high percentage of special needs students, which are costly to educate. And I believe if the data was disaggregated, that indeed the scores might be even higher for Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. The study said that there are twice as many special needs students in MPS as in the voucher program.
That's correct. The school district believes that the number is closer to 20%. Like I said, I know the school district is taking a careful look at this report, and their research department is going to release some data and their findings, but I don't have that yet.
And why is it more expensive to educate that population?
A lot of those special needs students need to have a paraprofessional with them. They have certain medical needs that need to be attended to. They're in smaller class sizes, and it just that leads to part of the cost and the need.
Mm-hmm. Your overall concerns about, well, what you think might be good about the voucher program and your overall concerns, would you list them for us, please, Tom?
One of the things that we've been asking for is, and this report did not release those figures, that we would like to do a comparison of school by school.
Mm-hmm.
We think all the test data for any public school is available to anyone by going on the school district website or DPI, and you can look at your child's school and see what the scores are. That data was not forthcoming in the study, and we're still waiting for that. The other concern that we have is the qualifications of teachers in voucher schools. The study didn't indicate. It indicated that supposedly there are more teachers with master degrees in choice schools. It didn't even talk about how many of those teachers have bachelor degrees. You only need to have a high school diploma to teach in a voucher school, whereas in a public school you have to be fully certified in the area you're teaching and have a minimum of a bachelor's degree. We think that obviously if somebody's teaching mathematics, they should have college training in teaching mathematics.
And, right.
We think that accountability in terms of test scores is something the legislature should require, since these schools get public money just like the public schools, and that the qualifications for teachers in voucher schools ought to be the same, that you should have a highly qualified teacher under the No Child Left Behind definition, and that they ought to have a college degree in the area that they're teaching.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. The article in the paper said a new requirement that the voucher schools become accredited by independent agencies is expected to result in the near elimination of teachers without college degrees. Can you expand on that?
We look forward to it. One of the issues coming forward is under No Child Left Behind, that every student is supposed to have a highly qualified teacher,
mm-hmm.
which means the teacher has to have a degree of preparation in the subject they teach. And as I said before, we believe that qualification should be also applicable to voucher schools.
Mm-hmm. It did show that teachers in voucher schools tend to stay longer than MPS schools. Can you learn something from that, from voucher teachers?
I question that data. Our quick review of the data shows that the data on Milwaukee public school teachers was achieved by looking at data from DPI. All the credentials of public school teachers are public knowledge. And the study says that they gathered the data on voucher schools by talking to 97 principals in 120 schools.
Mm-hmm.
So I have some questions about the validity of that data. If indeed it is true that teachers are staying longer in voucher schools, certainly, I mean, that's worth looking at. But I'm not convinced yet that indeed data was correct.
Right. And let me go back to what I'm seeing as the theme of the show, and that's that in both voucher schools and in MPS schools, low-income students are just not performing very well. They're at the 33rd percentile in math and in reading. That's not very good.
No, that's an extreme concern, and I know the teachers' union, which I represent, is working with the school district in a partnership, which is somewhat unusual, in looking for various ways to raise those scores. Those scores do need to be raised. But I think that this whole conversation about choice is a distraction, that the resources ought to be put into public schools and to address raising those test scores.
Mm-hmm. And what are the various ways you're looking at to raise those scores?
They're looking, they're examining programs in reading and math and different ways to raise those scores. One issue, obviously, is class size. I think the figures are not accurate that are in the study about class size in either the voucher or the public schools. There are classes in the public school system that have 40 students in them or more.
Yes.
And that's just simply too many.
Right.
Especially when you're working with students who come into the system at a disadvantage that they need a little catch-up. And but I have to say, the other part of the study that really, really I found enlightening was the fact that we have parents in the public school system in Milwaukee that care about their students just as much as any mm-hmm. parent in the suburbs, and that they're sitting down and helping their students with their homework. I mean, that's great.
Right.
That every teacher knows that kind of reinforcement is critical to making progress in the school. So when I saw that in the study, that's probably the one thing that stood out most to me mm-hmm. that was most gratifying.
Yeah, you must have been gratified to see the number of parents who were satisfied with their MPS schools.
Yeah, and like I said, that not only satisfied, but the fact that they become a partner in educating their child uh-huh. as a teacher, and they're sitting down and working with their child at home. I mean, there's no substitute for that.
Right. Let's take more phone calls, and we'll do that in just a moment.
Okay.
Tom Morgan is our guest now, and Tom is the executive director of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. We're looking at that major examination of Milwaukee's school voucher program, which has been around for a number of years now. And it is, now there are 18,000 Milwaukee students from low-income families attending private schools. 80% of those schools are religious schools. This study, there'll be a whole lot more of them in the next few years. It was conducted by a school choice demonstration project, part of the Department of Education Reform at the University of Arkansas. To your phone calls again in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, we'll be looking at those polls that show who's ahead in what state when it comes to the presidential elections. And they are so off. They have been so off for so many months. Why? We'll have a guest attempt to answer that question. And you can answer the question as well. Let's go to phone calls now. Again, Danny from Milwaukee. Hi.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Yes, I was just calling to comment on that article in the paper, which I read too. And first thing I thought was that, well, this is the wrong headline. It should be school voucher. Choice schools are no better than Milwaukee schools, in spite of all the money that we're putting into it. And I looked across the board and on the scores, and I said, well, it looks like they are everywhere below MPS on mathematics. And I don't know what causes this, whether it's quality of their teachers or whether it's prejudice against the sciences. But this is really something that needs to be looked into, because we really need, you know, qualified people in this country, and if they have, we need to look at how they're being served by the school vouchers institutions.
Thank you, Danny, for the call. Tom, are you there, Tom?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
No, sorry,
that's okay. Do you want to answer?
Yeah, you know, I. It appears in this that on the face of the report, there appears to be parity between voucher and public schools. But again, I think if we could look at individual school results, if we factor in the number of special needs students in the public schools, I contend that we'd actually find out that MPS is outperforming the voucher schools. You know, the one factor that excuse me. There's an article in the paper today by Eugene Kane,
mm-hmm.
and in the last sentence that he notes that the most important, more important than spending a lot of money on a private school, that the concentration and the importance is supporting good parents. And, you know, I think this issue, as we've talked about it within our association, goes beyond the schools, that the unemployment rate in Milwaukee for African-American males is alarming. And, we need to train students that can fill jobs. We also need jobs. And I know the mayor's working on that and the governor. But that's got to be a concentration within the city of Milwaukee. There have to be good jobs to support families
mm-hmm.
and the school system producing students that can take those jobs. And so the students in the system can see that getting an education could lead to a good livelihood for a family and a good future. And so, I don't think you can just separate out looking at the public schools in Milwaukee. The entire economic picture of the city is part of what's playing into this factor of the low scores.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Danny.
And that's true of both schools.
Thanks very much for the call. We go next to Muhammad from Madison. Hi, Muhammad.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And welcome back.
Thank you.
You know, I'm an old parent. I have adult children who came through the Milwaukee public school system. I have young children I'm raising now who have been in the Milwaukee public school system, as well as a choice school. And I think if you visited any of them, and I visited a number, there are poor public schools and there are poor choice schools.
Mm-hmm.
And to the gentleman's statement earlier, yes, if you have your child going to a religious choice school, there's no way your child is not going to receive some religious education or influence or culture, and they better be able to fit in there, or you have to make a choice of taking them out. And I had that experience when I had my daughter in the Salaam school. They had a project where she had to bring something she liked to school. She brought two movies that she liked, To Kill a Mockingbird and The Bad Seed, the old one. Her teacher told her, you do not ever bring something like this to school again. And I asked her why. She said, this is violent. I said, have you ever seen these movies? No, she just thought that To Kill a Mockingbird meant a bird is getting killed.
Oh, my gosh.
And so you have to educate yourself as a parent.
Yeah, I would say so.
When you send your kid to any public or choice school.
So did your daughter stay in that school or not?
Well, no, she did not stay in that school. And as even as a Muslim, and there have been other African-American Muslims who have attempted to put their children child through the Salaam school, and culturally it doesn't fit. And I think that's the real important thing about kids going to school, is because they have to do it again when they grow up and go to work. To go to work someplace, you have to be able to fit into the culture of that environment. And just like you can be uncomfortable in a choice school, if I took my kid to school, put them in school in Toma, Wisconsin, they might be culturally a misfit. But the key thing is they have to know to be able to fit into a culture when they get to be adults and go to work.
Sure. Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you, sir, that we live in a very diverse world, and children learning live in a diverse world is something that you get in the public school system, and it's something that you need to know when you go out and into the workplace. And further, I congratulate you. I mean, my strong belief about parents being involved and grandparents, et cetera, that's exactly what you did with your children, and there's no substitute for that. And I hope all parents would do that. So I congratulate you.
Thanks, Muhammad, very much for your call. Let's talk a little bit more about this money issue, because I'm sure there are several levels here. What does it mean for finances for MPS to have 18,000 Milwaukee children going to private schools? Does it drain a lot of money from MPS or not? If so, how does it do that?
I don't have the exact figure, but the finance office with the Milwaukee public school system has indicated to me it's a huge financial drain, and and part of that drain, I hate to keep going back to the same point, but I need to, that the Milwaukee public school system has a lot of special needs students, which are not in the voucher schools, and that takes away. When we lose money for students going into the system, you leave us with the more expensive students to educate, which I fully believe that they have a right to an education and can learn.
Mm-hmm.
They just need a little special help to get over a hump, like many of us in life at certain times. And that leaves the system with a financial drain that's simply not fair.
And what about this issue? Representative Kessler called in the first half hour of the program. I don't know if you heard that or not, but Mayor Barrett brought this up some time ago, that the school choice funding is having an adverse impact on Milwaukee property taxpayers, something having to do with the state not picking up the same amount of money for these students, and so they're getting hit twice.
That's correct. I don't know the exact details, being somewhat new to Milwaukee.
Right.
But I am aware that indeed that's true, that the Milwaukee taxpayers have to pay a higher tax rate to support the choice schools in a funding flaw. So you have it taking money away from the public schools, and the taxpayers in Milwaukee having to pay more to fund it, which in turn, as the article notes, lowers property tax for some people outstate because that state aid's not coming in here.
Right.
And it's just so unfair to the people in Milwaukee.
Well, why can't that be fixed?
Good question. Good question.
That's part of your job.
No, that's the legislature, and I think something's got to be done so that voucher schools or choice schools funding does not harm the revenue that we're receiving in the Milwaukee schools, and there has to be some kind of adjustment for the number of special needs students. The money that the school system gets, whether it's in Milwaukee or where I was before in Illinois, does not adequately fund educating the services needed for special needs students. And when you take a system and you leave a disproportionate number of special needs students in the system, take money away, that drains from other resources for other students that need help.
Right.
And you have things like class size at 47, which just can't be. We've got to reduce the class sizes, and then I think we will make some progress here.
Right. I agree with you. I just think that's so important. Those class sizes are so huge. Mm-hmm. How can teachers teach? I mean, how can you do it? What a job for a teacher.
Well, I sat down one time. You figure, let's say you have an hour class period, and you have 40-some students in it, and a student has to ask you a question, you know, doesn't understand a problem, needs some special help. You've got a little bit over a minute for each student to talk to them individually.
Mm.
There's nothing. I was a former teacher. In fact, I started teaching Milwaukee when I was out of college. And the time you can spend individually with each student in a classroom develops a relationship with the student. The student becomes not afraid to ask questions, and learning takes place. And you can't have that kind of individual touch when you have 40-some kids in a class.
Right. No, impossible. Marshall from Stoughton, hi.
Hello, good morning.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
I think you need to inform people, your guest does, about the actual requirements for people teaching science and mathematics courses in high school. And I'm talking about public as well as not private schools. For instance, right now, you can teach high school physics in the state in a public school having taken exactly one university physics class. So your guest remark about majoring in the subject, well, that has nothing to do with reality. Reality is you take one course. I teach these people at UW-Madison, and I can assure you that they are generally at the bottom of the class, and that's it. They're done.
Mm-hmm.
Those are your high school physics teachers, by and large.
Mm-hmm. Tom.
I'm, excuse me, my voice is gone today. I'm not sure that indeed is accurate. I came out of college as a science teacher. Didn't teach physics, but I had a full degree in science. And the requirements that I'm aware of with DPI would require someone to have minimum number of hours to teach a subject, so I'm not sure that indeed is accurate. Like I said, I am new to Wisconsin, but I know in the state that I came from, and I think it's applicable to most states, that the state prescribes you have to have so many hours in a certain subject in order to be able to teach it, and I'll be happy to look at it in Wisconsin. I don't have the answer, but I can't believe that you can have one course in physics and teach physics in the state.
Hmm. You can respond, Marshall, if you'd like.
Your guest doesn't know what he's talking about. It's as simple as that. I do this. I've talked with both the dean of the School of Education and with the students who take these classes, and what I have told you is accurate, and if your guest thinks otherwise, he should learn what the facts are.
Mm. Well, he is new to the state, so I'm sure that he'll be looking that up today, as a matter of fact. Thank you very much for your call. Carmen is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Carmen.
Hi. I was just calling because I have my son in a Catholic school, and I don't think he's in a large size of class, and I think they're pretty good. I mean, he's reading well. He's in the first grade, and the class is only like 7 students. So I'm not sure if I understand if the I guess the religion schools are behind the MPS, or if the MPS is behind on the scores.
I think
I'm kind of confused.
All right, the scores are. Somewhat comparable. The scores were fourth grade. The voucher schools were behind MPS by eighth grade. The voucher schools are a little bit above, but it's kind of a wash. Is that the way you would interpret it, Tom?
Yeah, that's what I initially said on the show. We don't know. We have not seen individual data from individual voucher in private schools. And so I don't know that I can even answer that without that data. You can see the data for any public school by going to the district's website or at the state. It's all public information. We don't have that information on individual schools, so I really can't respond to it. I mean, even if I knew which school it was, I couldn't tell you because they don't release their data to the public.
The study was a sample of voucher students, same test given to public school students in Wisconsin, and compared the results to those of a scientifically matched group of MPS students was the way that it was done.
Question,
yeah,
so.
Tom, thank you so much for being with us.
I appreciate it.
Tom Morgan, who is just new, he just arrived as MTEA, Milwaukee Teachers Education Association Executive Director, and we thank him for being with us to talk about this major study on the voucher program. We also thank Mike Ford, Research Associate with School Choice Wisconsin. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the program, to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee, and thanks for your calls, everybody. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.